You are listening to the Racing TV podcast On The Wire in association with Bar One Racing.
And you're very welcome to On The Wire. It's Johnny Ward here with Brendan Duke, and we are looking ahead to Fairy House, Punchestown, and a little bit of Dundalk going into the weekend. It's been a beautiful morning so far on this Friday morning in Ireland, and it's all the more beautiful to have you along, Dukey. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm very well, and a new experience here. We have a live audience, a cooing pigeon at the window. I only hope the listeners are cooing as much as that pigeon.
Yeah, I've had lots of issues with pigeons over the years in this apartment, making me sleep a lot worse. Seagulls as well, even had the cuckoo. Pigeons are the worst, so they get really, really annoying. I was trying to figure a way that you could put one of those fake kind of birds of prey up, hanging up on the top of the building, but I haven't quite managed it yet.
You were cheaper than a shotgun, I suppose.
It is. But it's also the fact that the pigeons are playing with your mind, because it depends on, if you're not sleeping well, the pigeons exacerbated. If you're sleeping well, the pigeons don't exist because you don't hear them.
Ah, right, okay, levels within levels. Okay, I'll have to think about that.
The line about, is it catching pigeons in the gallop or whatever it is? What did you make of Sunday at Naas briefly? I met you there, the Duke Junior was along as well. He was racing to see one horse. Not even one man, but one horse.
Well, who wasn't there? And if you will indulge me, Johnny, for the listeners that weren't lucky enough to be there, perhaps I can try to convey what it was like.
Before we get to Dukey, here is Gordon Elliott speaking after the victory of Envoy LN. Actually, just let's hear Envoy LN in action first.
And to the final flight in the Lawlers of Naas Novice, it's Envoy LN. Gordon Elliott's the real thing. Over the last, a couple of lengths in front, Elixir Danny in second, and then Longhouse Poet. Into the closing stages in the Lawlers of Naas Novice Hurdle, it's Envoy LN Racing's World Looks His Oyster and will maintain his perfect record in the colours of Chidley Park Stud, ridden by Davy Russell. Elixir Danny is second.
He won, it's great he won, but we never really expect him to win any more than a couple of lengths, because if you look at all his runs, that's all he ever does. When he gets there, he just does what he has to do. Davy said he'd earned plenty off the run. And the thing I was most happy about is having a good blow after the race. We haven't killed him at work since the last 10. He's having a good proper blow after the race, so for me that's encouraging.
We saw him in the Royal Bond making the running. The other horse took him on today and went ahead of him. Do you think that would have taught him a bit more?
Yeah, definitely. That's why we set him up on trip. We just making running the whole time isn't just ideal with him, but he learned plenty today and we're happy.
And what about his jumping overall? Do you think that stood up every bit as well when the horse took him on?
I thought he was good, yeah. Yeah.
Now, future plans, I guess he's going to go straight to Cheltenham from here, surely.
He'll be entering everything in the Dublin Festival, but obviously I'd have to talk to Chris Richards and Mr. and Mrs. Thompson and the whole team and see where we go. But
is that what you'd like to do?
It wouldn't be a shock if we went straight to Cheltenham, yeah. Mm.
And what would be his target there? Is the Ballymore looking more and more likely after that?
He'll probably have three entries, the Ballymore, Supreme Novice and the Champion Hurdle. And we'll discuss it with the owners. But my own good feeling is we keep him in his own grade at the moment.
Visit bar1racing.com for best odds guaranteed and extra places every day on UK and Irish horse racing, extra places every week on major golf events, and double the odds on first goal score bets on selected games. Bar1 Racing, your number one bookmaker, where the customer comes first. And remember to check us out on social media. At Bar1 Racing is the Twitter handle to follow, where you'll find our daily specials on a range of sports.
So this lad comes into the parade ring. He's a thing of bloody beauty. And I think Davy Russell says, wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him. He's a bit of a brute.
Well, yes. I mean he's a physical phenom. Everything about him. It's the dawn of a new decade. We lay our scene in Naas on Naas, a nice little place to shop. On a January day that would have been fit for purpose in April, the faithful have gathered to see a horse, Johnny. A horse who was bought to be a staying chaser, but has the speed and athleticism to look like a top-class two-mile hurdler. A horse whose exploits will be talked about for decades to come. And that horse delivered, creating an atmosphere of bonhomie and conviviality, best summed up by the boy Conor Magner, who upon seeing two fire engines at the main gate remarked, "Someone must have called to tell them Envoy LN is on fire." Bloody good bands, bloody good horse.
Beautiful, Dukey. Conor Magner, one of the gents, or certainly one of the characters of the racing game, a good operator, one of the leading bookmakers. You actually said to me after the race, I think the boy Envoy is carrying a bit of condition here today.
Well, I mean, he's such a big unit. It's very difficult for paddock watchers generally, well, for this paddock watcher generally, but National Hunt horses, because of the age they are, they always carry a bit more condition. And they need it to sustain them over the trips and over on that really taxing ground or what have you. So I'm sure he was perfectly fit. The question it has been raised in other quarters, and legitimately so, because you have to be very careful when you say horses are idling in front of what have you, because you're giving them credit for something they haven't actually achieved. But I put it to you, Johnny Ward, we have seen in the Leopardstown bumper, the Cheltenham bumper, the Royal Bond, and at Nace on Sunday, a horse who just keeps finding when something comes to him. Have we not seen enough evidence to suggest that this horse is keeping a bit back for himself?
Yeah, as you say, when you marry the fact that he's doing all that and he's winning so easily, but he's actually just doing the bare minimum, then you have this cocktail of what could this horse actually do? I thought he was staggeringly good looking. I'm no paddock judge, but I thought he took my breath away, and the amount of people that were there to take a photo of him, to take a selfie of him. I even got a photo with Willie Mullins looking on admirably, admiringly in the background. 6-4 for the Ballymore. I put up on Twitter during the week, I would be more worried about Fiddler on the Roof beating him in the Ballymore than I would anything beating him in the Supreme, if Fiddler on the Roof took him on in the Ballymore. But the way it's looking, I think he'll run in the Ballymore, and I think 6-4 is probably buying money if he does.
I would agree with you. Now, the only thing is, you could have Fiddler step up. I know you really rate him. And the big breakaway looks a weapon as well. Could be a hell of a Ballymore, but I just cannot look past this horse. Actually, an interesting point about Willie Mullins looking on. I put it to you, is it possible that Elixir Danny, who ran a fine race in behind Envoy Alain, might avoid him and step back and trip for the Supreme? He could be a live one for the Supreme. Jumped and travelled really well. I don't think he had any problem with the drop and trip.
And we also had Martin Brazel, who was very, very happy with the run of the third horse, Longhouse Poet, who, for the same connections, looked like he will go for one of the kind of staying novice races. And it was just a fascinating race in many ways. We're so kind of up for telling the listeners what it is on this show. I've been on to Peter the King Kingston from Bar One as we speak, because there is, at this present moment in time, no odds on Bar One for the Danny for the Supreme.
Ah, interesting. Well, he is entered, so I think they should get it up. And I met the King on Sunday. I met everyone on Sunday. But
everyone was there.
Everyone was there. So I'm sure they will have a price up. He's going to be something around 20 to 1. I know you're taking a chance, but I just get the sense that Willie doesn't have any appetite to take on Envoy Alain. You just have to look at that photograph. He was awestruck.
He was absolutely awestruck. A stablemate of his in at a big price, 25 to 1 for that race. I'm not going to name him, but have a look at the market. A horse from the Mullins yard that could yet have a say in the Supreme, according to my good mate John Delaney. Now, Patrick Mullins was absolutely brilliant. I don't know if you saw him on Racing TV on Thursday.
Yes, well, I saw some clips on Twitter.
He spoke very, very well in general, and he spoke about, I suppose, what happened at Nace, what happened over the Christmas as well. He was speaking to Will Haler. We started off talking about Sharjah and Faheen, the obvious two highlights of the Christmas. Then we went on to talk about two of Sunday's stable representatives, Black Bow and Carefully Selected. And it should just be noted, this interview took place before declarations.
It did. You know, the ground dried up hugely for the last day of Leopardstown. So, you know, 3:49 would be very quick for 2 miles in winter. That suited him. The winter strong gallop early on, Petit Mouchoir and Classic Dream were taking one to their on. Once Classic Dream was in a mistake, the pace has slowed. My fellas jumped so well, I've ended up sitting in second at halfway, which wasn't really where I wanted to be. But it was the way he was jumping and travelling, we've ended up there. So I was able to put Davy in a bit of a pocket on Cour Sublime, turning out of the back. Paul started to put my outside down to the second last, which wasn't ideal. I didn't want to be getting going there, but luckily his challenge has died away, and I've been able to just come down and take Rachel and Petit Mouchoir when I wanted to just before the last, and he's seen it out well from there.
Obviously, he was brought down at a fairly early stage in the Champion Hurdle last year, but no reason to think why you shouldn't go back and have another go.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, last year the ground was soft, and that's a question mark with him. But even though we'd only gone 3 hurdles, I thought I was travelling, I thought I was handling the ground, and I was jumping well, because usually he's a horse, he hasn't got a huge amount of scope. He likes to get in tight. He's very neat and quick in tight. And that's the lesson I learnt off him when he fell with me there 2 years ago in Leopardstown. But I would love to go back there again. And we put a tongue tie on him in Leopardstown. It didn't really need it on the good ground, but it didn't do him any harm. So we'll leave that on, and that might help him on softer ground.
Well, better mention Faheen and that amazing victory at Limerick on St Stephen's Day. From watching it on the screen, it looked like it was an incredibly emotional victory, as well as a, you know, fantastic achievement, you know, great performance as well.
It was magic. Funnily enough, it was probably the most nervous I've been before a race. I'm not really sure why, but there's probably a bit of responsibility to riding a horse like Faheen at his age. But throughout the race, he jumped brilliant. You know, from the back of the third last, we really turned the taps on. Even though myself and Jack are sitting still, we've raced down the hill. You know, we pulled 10 or 12 lengths clear to third horse, Castlebrook. And he's just broken Sam Crowe down to the second last. You know, he's winged the last two. And the roar from the crowd when we landed at the back of the last, usually as a jockey you don't hear that. So that was incredible. And then, you know, looking up the stands, there was papers going up, there was hats flying, there were people running to the parade ring. You don't see it very often. So it was a very special occasion, and it was just magic to be part of it.
What's the plan for Faheen now? Are we likely to see him next at the Dublin Racing Festival?
I imagine that's the logical place to go, the PJ Moriarty over 2 mile 5. I imagine that's where he'll turn up. He's fine since the race. John Cotter rides him at home, very happy with him. He enjoys chasing. It's really turned him on this year. So I imagine he'll go to Leopardstown next.
And the Cheltenham Festival possibly for him, and I guess Punchestown as well, maybe?
Yeah, you know, and maybe the Powers Gold Cup or in the 2.5 mile novice chase in Fairy House is a possibility as well. We'll look at the Marsh and the RSA in Cheltenham, but we'll know more after his next run in Leopardstown.
Carefully Selected. Now, he was a horse who we thought we might have been seeing at Leopardstown over Christmas. Ground came up perhaps a bit quicker than people were expecting for that final day of the Christmas meeting, and the decision was taken to pull him out. What do you think his likely ambitions come the end of the season are going to be?
Well, he's probably going to be a stayer, I would imagine. You know, he's a very old-fashioned looking horse, big, strong. He ran very well in Cheltenham in the bumper over 2 miles. So that's the thing about him. He's deceptively quick. To look at him, you don't think he's quick. But when you saw the mistake he made at the second last when he won his beginner chase in Fairy House and how quickly he was able to recover from that mistake and get to the front before the last, he showed a huge turn of foot. But I think stamina is probably his strong point. So if we can stretch him out to 3 miles, hopefully maybe even 4 miles, I think his turn of foot will be a potent weapon.
Let's talk about Black Bow. He's a horse that couple of years back look extremely promising indeed, really well fancied for the champion bumper at Cheltenham a couple of seasons back, but he's clearly had his problems since.
Yeah, he's a beautiful horse, a real oil painting of a horse, covers a lot of ground easily by stowaway, won an English point to point. He was a very good bumper horse. He was fifth in Cheltenham, keen, and we've after putting a hood on him there, and he was going to win his maiden hurdle very well. When he just threw himself the last, it was a silly mistake. Shouldn't really have done it because he'd had a run and he ran a point to point. One of those things. He seems fine afterwards, and I think he's a horse with an awful lot of ability. He's very high cruising speed, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to see his full potential on Sunday.
He has a future in the game, the boy Mullins. He can ride, he can write, he can talk.
I know, yeah. Again, it's a little bit like Franberry. It's very worrying for the likes of me trying to break into the game. He's got too many skills. I mean, it's not fair.
Could Faheen, a 12-year-old horse, win a Grade 1 at Cheltenham?
Well,
a Grade 1 novice race, I put it to you.
I've had a few quid on him for the Marsh Chase.
Interesting. Formerly known as the JLT. Formerly known as... Was it the Juicing back in the day?
Oh, was it?
I can't remember anymore.
Yeah, no. I can remember about 2 weeks ago.
One might say there are too many races at Cheltenham, Juki.
Oh, look. Well, let's not get into that, but that is a fact. So I've when you look at down the list of the horses in the Marsh, some of them won't run, obviously, but even the ones that will run wouldn't catch your eye. And I just have this thing about Faheen that he's a better chaser than a hurdler. I mean, he's given up respecting hurdlers. He's just booting them out of the ground. So at least he technically looks fine over a fence. And I'm not sure he fully stays 3 miles. Now, he won in Punchestown, the staying hurdle, but he got a bit of a solo that day. Finished third in a stairs hurdle, good effort, and no shame. I mean, Paisley Park had run down the Roadrunner, so there's no shame in that. But he didn't even finish second, having travelled better than anything in the race. So I think the intermediate trip might be the ideal race for him. Jumps.
You almost say this as if it's something left field when he's bloody well favoured for the race, Shuki.
Oh, no, I know that. Yeah, no, absolutely. But I still think he's...
Come on.
No, but I still think 8-1 is a fair price.
13-2 at bar one.
Okay. I still think 13-2 is a fair price. Sorry.
What about Sam Crowe? I'm getting no love from Connections at all. They've almost... I just think of Sam Crowe now as... Do you remember when you know, you've heard the stories of when there's a baby and that everyone loves the baby in the house, and then the baby gets older and then another baby comes along and the older baby gets really resentful of this new kid on the block who's getting all the attention. Sam Crowe must be looking at Envoy LN's barn and just thinking, you bastard, that used to be me.
Possibly.
Trained by Colin Bow, of course.
Possibly. Look, just let it go, Johnny. It's done.
It's gone.
It's gone. Just let it go. Move on. It's Envoy Allen time. You've got a new hero.
What was PW's line? He said, we broke Sam Crowe or something like that. It was a great line about from the second last. I can't remember the exact terminology, but I'm not giving up just yet, Dukie. I just can't.
Okay. Well, they broke him. He's too pretty to push through the pain barrier. That's the problem.
Sarah Lynham, what can we say about her Joy of Six contribution this week? You see, we're these grizzled veterans of the game. You know, we're kind of already washed up and whatever we are, late 30s, early 40s. Sarah Lynham is none of that. She has enthusiasm, she has vigour, she has interest, she has love for the game, as evidenced in this week's Joy of Six.
Well, it's just, when I listen to this, that's exactly it. She just radiates enthusiasm. Now, I think if you're in that game, you have to have a lot of enthusiasm, because, I mean, she's talking about getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's like dealing with druids, dealing with people that look after horses, but she absolutely loves it.
What's your favourite race course and why?
Flemington is my favourite race course. I think it's just a beautiful track. It's sort of got a spectacular atmosphere there, and it's really stunning to look at. I used to work there, so I have really good memories of the place. And I remember the first day I brought a horse racing, when I took it off the lorry, you just walk into a long walkway with roses all around you. There's roses around the saddling stalls. The stands are beautiful, and I think the racetrack itself is gorgeous. And there probably isn't a better sight in racing, if you ask me, than the horses galloping up the Flemington Straight, particularly in the sprints. I've been there as an owner as well, when Slade Power ran over there, and they treated us so well. So I just think it's second to none.
Name of your favourite racehorse, past or present.
Favourite horse and why? I have to name two horses here, because it's been very hard to whittle them down, and I'm already feeling a bit guilty about the ones I left out. So first of all, I have to say Bishop's Furs. I don't know, do you remember him? I looked after him in Willie Mullins's. I looked after him for about 2 years, rode him out every day, did everything with him, brought him racing, brushed him over. So he was like my best pal in the yard. I absolutely adored him. I was utterly besotted. I think the jockeys hated him because he was an atrocious jumper. I remember him nearly killing Ruby in Goran one day, and it ending up all over the papers, but he tried to bank a chase fence. But if he could have jumped, he would have been a grade one horse, which is a big if, but I loved him anyway. And Fiorente is my other favourite. I used to ride him out in Gaze, rode him out for about 6 weeks leading up to the Melbourne Cup. So just being so involved with a group one horse's prep, and then when it coming off like that, because you'd be watching for all these little niggly problems and watching him so carefully, and it was the biggest thrill of my life when he won the Melbourne Cup, I have to say. He had really good presence. He was a really kind horse. He was really tough as well, because he was just touched off in the Melbourne Cup the year before I went there. And the morning after he won the race, I rode him out at 4 a.m. and he was bucking and squealing around the track. So I probably wouldn't meet another horse like him. He probably doesn't get the credit he deserved. He won group ones from 10 furlongs to 2 miles, and he also was third in a group one over 7 furlongs, so he wasn't lacking any speed either, and I hope he's going to be a good stallion. He's had a couple of good horses.
What one change would you bring to racing?
Again, there's a lot of things I could say for this. I've kind of got basic problems with various elements of how it's run, from the fixture list to how trainers and staff are being looked after. But I think the one that really stands out to me is that we need to make it a priority how we look after the fans, the ordinary punters out there, and new fans, and attracting new fans to racing, because I think they get a very, very little attention. I think I can't think of any race course in Ireland that looks after the ordinary fans adequately. They're meant to, between races, wander around some smelly food hall that smells like cabbage or chips and eat the kind of food you wouldn't serve to a drunk falling out of a nightclub. So you know, when they don't get looked after, they're not going to want to come back. You know, these long queues for toilets and queuing for food and all that, that's very off-putting for people to plan their day around going to be treated like that at the races. So I think we need to make more of a fuss of them And then as well, we need to attract more people to racing. I'd like to see more ads about races coming up, you know, more ads in social media. There's an ad going around about racing, but it's lads wandering around a betting ring with hardly any focus on the horse. And the horse is what's really going to draw people into racing, you know. Betting is a dodgy way of trying to attract new people, because everyone knows that racing is associated with betting, but not everyone knows the majesty and the beauty of a racehorse. So I think we need to look at a new way of promoting our sport.
What was the best bet you ever placed?
The best bet I've ever had. I wouldn't be much of a gambler now, to be honest, but when I was in college, I did a Yankee and all four horses won. It's probably bad that I can't remember all the horses. I do remember Pigeon Island was on it, and Nowhere, because I really liked him for some reason. So I actually won a few grand on that, which don't think lasted as long as it should have lasted. And then after that, no joke, every horse I backed either fell or was pulled up. So I learnt my lesson anyway, I didn't get hooked.
Give us a horse to look out for.
This is kind of a hard time of year to pick out a horse to follow, because bar the all-weather horses, nothing's in fast work. They're only cantering and tipping away. But I will say, without jinxing the horse, hopefully, that I'm really looking forward to Just Brilliant. I bought him at the July sales last year for 18,000 guineas. Bought him from my uncle, who's going to be a new owner in the yard. So hopefully this will work out well. He was 150,000 guineas as a yearling. He's a half-brother to a Group 1 winner. And he showed plenty of promise early on for Peter Chappelheim. He won his maiden and was fifth in a Craven after that. Glorious Journey was just in front of him. So it's good form, but obviously he lost his way after that. He was off for a year and never regained his form. When I got him, he was probably a bit down the dumps and maybe a little bit sick of racing. So I've given him time out the field and he's just back doing a bit of flat work and steady cantering. He looks delighted with himself. So I could do with a decent horse, something to take me out of the nod, 65 bracket. So crossing my fingers for him.
And this week's wildcard question.
And is Eddie Lynam the wittiest trainer? He probably is. He's fairly funny, all right. He kind of has no holes barred and says whatever comes into his head. It's gotten him in trouble the odd time, and we have to keep a close eye on him. He's not allowed on Twitter, and he's not allowed on his racing Instagram either, in case he says anything dodgy. But no, he has to be censored a little bit, but I suppose he is funny, to be fair.
She made some interesting points there about looking after people who go racing, and I think that was a big thing. I really enjoyed Nace on Sunday. I thought the facilities were great. It was a really nice atmosphere in terms of the, you know, the pre-parade and all that, everyone there to see a horse. But I still think we could do more to actually look after the race score.
She mentioned something about the food. Is the food that bad? I don't generally eat at the races, although I make a point of eating in Dundalk because it is so nice and quite reasonable as well. I'm trying to think. You see, I'm probably the wrong man to talk to. We probably need to bring my mother to the races and do a trip advisor on it, because she would talk about facilities. Like, once I have somewhere to keep the rain off and somewhere to have a bet. And of course, the Wi-Fi now. The Wi-Fi is absolutely marvellous at Irish race courses. So I'm probably the wrong man to talk to, because I'm not very demanding of facilities.
I only found out this weekend that your mother is only Jack Davison's aunt.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Took you a long time to register there, Dukey. This is your mother we're talking about.
Yeah, but she's his aunt-in-law. Is that a thing? So my dad is Jack Davison's mother's brother. Ah, this is getting ridiculous. Yeah.
We have a connection. Anyway, another young trainer who's making waves as well as Jack Davison is the boy Dunica Aidan O'Brien. So you can just kind of cross out Dunica in the race card and it's Aidan O'Brien. Tonight's going to be exciting for the young man.
Yeah, a couple of decent chances. One of them a favourite, was second at Leopardstown. The Leopardstown race fell asunder a bit.
We actually only got Dunica giving us a little bit of audio on their respective chances.
Both Flower Garland and Mythologic are in good form. They're both fitting well. I think they both have little chances. Obviously, the handicaps are competitive up there, so we'll see with Flower Garland. And in the maidens, it's hard to tell. There's a few that had nice runs and a few unraced ones, so it's hard to tell. But I think they both have little chances without calling them certainties. And they're the only two I have for the winter series, so hopefully we can get a few runs into them before the turf starts.
Bar one have a little special here, Juki. They go, what am I looking at here? They go 8-5 that he has a winner. Is it written in the stars?
Well, things tend to happen when that family wants something to happen. They generally do happen. I was looking at both of them and I thought they were both opposable, actually. But it's 8-5. You're getting odds against. So what did you think? You followed Dundalk more closely than I do.
Yeah, both had chances without. I mean, if they weren't trained by Dunaké, you'd probably have them a little bit bigger. I think bookmakers have a right to be a little bit kind of wary, just that he would like to get off the mark on his first start. Sarah Lynham, she's only texted in about her horse, So Familiar. New addition to the yard. I bought her at the HIT sales in Goffs out of Johnny Murtis. Obviously, she never ran well last year, but she was a decent two-year-old, and I'm hoping she might be a fun filly if she regains her spark. Haven't tested her at home. She's very fresh and well, so I'm hoping she shows us something tonight. Tyr Connell gets into the last race. He was a reserve named after a lovely whiskey. He had a bad time the last day, coughed 40 times after the race, and seemed to choke on the kickback. Very consistent up to that and happy at home, so hopefully he forgets that bad experience. The Limonator is off the charts this week with information.
Root Bradshaw is just the gift that keeps on giving.
Yep. Like a female Frank Berry.
Well, indeed, yeah. Fran Berry, to clarify. We'll get Frank on one. That'll be your greatest coup ever. If you get Frank Berry on this podcast, I put it to you, it'll be the last podcast, because that's it. You've peaked, haven't you?
That probably is true, to be fair, but I was actually on about Frank, not Fran. But, you know, Frank, I think we get both of them on the show at some stage. Interesting night at Dundalk before we get to the big action of the weekend. And a couple of fairly ordinary races towards the end of the card. I do like the chance of Tynamite, who's been quite frustrating in the 8 o'clock with a good gallop, should be thereabouts. But the action this weekend is mainly Fairy House on Saturday and Sunday at Punchestown. And before we get to Punchestown, it's time for a golden oldie that, even before listening, I'm already getting a little bit emotional here.
Yeah, well, one of the great, I was going to say jewels, but not jewels, because there were three of them. What do you call them when there's three horses with legitimate chances, three top-class horses?
It was a walkover, because Moscow Flyer did what he did and did what he always did when he stayed up.
And now the race is on as they turn for home. Geraghty looks round again, almost with nonchalance there. Assertiot now being driven. Well Chief is third. At the second last, Moscow Flyer from Assertiot. Then Well Chief in third, trying to reel them back. Moscow Flyer's got them on the stretch as they run down to the last. Moscow Flyer chased by Assertiot and Well Chief at the final fence. Moscow Flyer by a length and a half. Well Chief, though, is bridging the gap in second, the young horse. In third is Assertiot. The hill, can the old boy hold on? It's Moscow Flyer chased by World Chief and Assertiot, and Moscow Flyer wins the Tingle Creek for the second year running.
Open an account with BarwinRacing.com and receive a €30 or £30 free bet when you place a bet of €10 at evens or greater. T's and C's apply. Barwin Racing, your number one bookmaker, where the customer comes first.
Great days.
Yeah, my marvellous race, a gold major, 2 mile chasing, and 2 mile chasing is my favourite division in national racing, so a glorious time.
On that note, who wins the Queen Mother?
I wasn't that disappointed with the horse in Leopardstown. I was disappointed.
Check on Poussoir.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed because I thought he had a bit of a feel about an invincible Adam. But we have to get away from this and realise that horses can get beaten in various scenarios, and it doesn't necessarily detract from them. American race fans would be much more familiar with this. We're obsessed with unbeaten records and what have you, but they realise that horses get beaten for various reasons on various days. Hopefully he'll peak in the spring as he did last year, and if he does, I still think he's the real deal, and Shacklin would be the one for me.
Talk to me. The Dan and Joan Moore Memorial Handicap Chase, 2:10.
Oh, I mean,
this is Fairy House tomorrow. This race is everything, right? I'm sorry to rudely interrupt. At the time of speaking, it has 16 runners, which bookmakers hate for a good reason. It has Us and Them having his sophomore season, coming back into a handicap, which is, I think, fascinating. I suppose starting off this 2020 campaign, having been such a good novice last season, won 36 days ago. We have Vanita. And we have Rock the World down at the bottom trying to, I suppose, recapture old glories. And we have My Selection, who's Charlie Stout.
Okay, well, I think you've summed the race up very well. The only redeeming quality it has is that it's a quarter to four, 16 runners. It looks impossible.
Perhaps, what wins?
I won't actually be having a bet in the race, but if I was, Articulum. I think you can make a case that he's still well handicapped. But you've mentioned five other credible contenders. You could name 10. It's an impossible race.
which is beautiful for bookmakers and punters. It was like the bumper, actually. I want to bring this up. The bumper at Nace last Sunday was absolutely bloody beautiful. There was no form. There was a load of flatbred horses. There was the debate that I had, which I more or less got wrong, about what horses will actually get home here. Some of them did, some of them didn't. There was word for four horses. I got word for four horses. None of them won. I fancied the fourth, which had a good bet each way on because it's By Fame and Glory out of a bumper winner. I said it to the Duke. I said, have a look at this horse in the paddock. Neither of us was very impressed. It wasn't particularly sizable. But what I loved about this race was nobody bloody had a clue. Charles Burns went off and won. His horse finished fifth. Nobody knew. Everything was happening in terms of the on-course market. And I lost, but I loved the way the race panned. It was like the old days. Nobody knew. And we were all right and we were all wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are very Irish. You love Ireland, you love Irish people, and you love bumpers. Because it's just an obsession Irish people have with bumpers. And I'll tell you why. They love people.
It's always the last race as well, suspiciously. Haven't had word for one in the last race. Keeps you there.
Well, and also, I mean, if they turned it around, if the maiden hurdle was the last race and the bumper was the first race, the bookies would be out of business. So the Irish people, the English people have a very grown-up attitude to bumpers. It's like, we'll give them a day out, but it's a flat race. We bought this horse to jump over obstacles. This is a flat race. We don't really care. Irish people, obsessed with them because it's inside information. I know something that someone else doesn't know. But as you have just pointed out, four people know. There are known knowns and known unknowns. There's four people who know something different. So they're a complete bookie's benefit, but there's something about bumpers that just taps into the Irish psyche, and I don't think it's going away based on last Sunday.
My best bet at Fairy House is Takaringo in the first race. You might remember he was massively eye-catching behind Juki Senior's Lagan Gaelga at Leopardstown at Christmas. Now, it was a bit strange that he rocked up on the 4th of January in a maiden hurdle against older horses, in which he was a little bit disappointing. What's even stranger is the fact that he rocks up again 6 days later. Now, either Tom Mullins is absolutely desperate to get some prize money, which I don't believe he is, or he's shown a wily knack here of trying to strike while the iron is relatively hot at home, and targeting the first race, the 12:25 tomorrow, means that he's not targeting a maiden hurdle, which to me implies that he thinks this horse could win under Dunamilo. What do you like in the card?
What do I like on the card? The 2:45 is an interesting novice chase. Animix makes his chase debut. Now, he's not a horse I have full faith in. He could be interesting over fences with the Faheen angle.
He's 3 years younger than a fellow Connections horse making his own chase debut today, the one and only Max Dynamite, which will be very shortly.
Oh, yeah. I'd be interested to see what price he is, or he was the talk of Twitter last night. But now, Animix could go like Faheen in that he is not a particularly good jumper of hurdles. Fencing might be the make of him, but he's not a horse I have full faith in. So I will take him on with Chosen Mate, who you may remember finishing third behind Melon in Leopardstown over Christmas. Bit novice-y at the fences, granted, but jumped a few of them pretty well to show that he might have a future in the game. He's an ex-pointer. He wasn't knocked about, was inclined to go out to his right, so you would think he might jump a bit better going this way around, and I thought he'd be the value play against likely Fav Animix.
Right, we're on to Sunday, which is a good card at Punchestown featuring the Killiney Novice Chase, a Grade 3, and another Grade 3 contest in the shape, or rather Grade 2 contest in the shape of the Moscow Flyer Novice Hurdle. I guess we should start with the big race, Juki. The Andy Dufresne angle is an interesting one for me. Okay. The McManus operation, it is what it is. He puts an incredible amount of money into the game. I find it hard to predict their planning of horses, and legitimately this horse could be beaten in this race because of the trip, because I think he wants at least 2.5 miles. Now granted, he was beaten at Navan over 2.5 miles when you thought he'd be absolutely ready made for the trip. This is obviously an ex-pointer, sold for a load of money, looked like a stayer when he won at Down Royal. He's a novice. If you go to Cheltenham with a novice, you may have something in hand in a handicap. Andy Dufresne may rock up in any race at Cheltenham. I don't think he'll be running in the Ballymore. I don't think he'll be running in the Supreme. I'm not sure they want to bottom him out in the Albert Bartlett. I put it to you, Juki. This horse may win, but he may be beaten by the trip on Sunday. He may go to Cheltenham with a nice mark.
Right, yeah. I suppose that's possible. I think they have higher hopes for him than a handicapper, though. But again, trying to work that operation out, you might well be onto something there. It wasn't something that had crossed my mind. I thought he'd go for... But a lot depends on what happens on Sunday. I mean, if he wins this race, he'll have to go for one of the novice races, I would say, because I think this... Well, there's at least one proper horse waiting for him here.
What wins it?
I am going to take a chance on this Captain Guinness.
Trained by HDB, who's had an unbelievable campaign, was a 20-1 shot first time out, but I'm always very impressed with horses who can win a maiden hurdle without having run anywhere before.
Well, and so you should be, because all the talk afterwards was a Black Bow. But I think that the way Captain Guinness sprinted up the Navan Hill, he would have caught Black Bow. And you look at this race.
Belfast Banter as well would have won a Cork, but for falling, I think the form is very, very solid.
Very, very solid. I was going to mention that. And the fourth has gone in since. And Black Bow is a proper horse with a big future. Now, this horse jumped particularly well on his debut, this Captain Guinness. Now, not that we would expect that anything less coming out of the Hotel HDB. He was a touch keen early, but settled much better amongst horses. He's going to want further, as with Andy Dufresne, but I think he might just be able to cope, and he's a horse with a serious future.
We'll get to the other graded race as well, which takes place at 105. Here we go. Remember you talking about him earlier in the season? Carefully selected. Are you going to be careful in your selection here in the 105?
Yeah.
You don't sound convinced. Well, City Island rocking up as well. This is mad. What's going on? The boy Brassel, he said, I love the way he says, there were many reasons given for why he didn't perform at Leopardstown. It almost implied that Martin, who was seen leaving the racetrack with a scowl on his face that day, but actually had a nice winner at Ney subsequently, he might think somewhat differently to the prevailing opinion out there. This horse doesn't look very big to me, for one thing.
Well, he's not. And he's not only is he not very big, he's quite a light-framed horse as well. He doesn't look an obvious type for chasing. But what they were probably relying on was he had an impeccable hurdling technique. But he doesn't seem to have an impeccable chasing technique. Now, it's only one run, and it is interesting that they're willing to pitch him in at this level. That would suggest that they're happy with his schooling. I'd be inclined to go a carefully selected. I was a little bit... wasn't happy particularly with his jumping in Fairy House, and he was inclined to go out to his left, which is
it good. Would never be carefully selected if there were not some sort of enigmatic factor involved.
You say that. I mean, he's a stayer with speed, for want of a
sound like Dermot Well there,
for want of a better phrase. So I think he'd be able to cope with the trip, although he will ultimately want further in time to be seen at his best. Yeah, I think I'll go a carefully selected. I give Speakeasy a life down the bottom as well, but a carefully selected would be my selection.
It's an intriguing card in general at Punchestown. If the weather is anything like it is right now, with the sun shining up my back, it'll make it all the more alluring. I am going to go with a very interesting riding arrangement here. Gordon Elliott booking P.W. Mullins in the total event, Redland Qualified Riders Handicap Chase. Of course, this horse was touched off. Cheb de Kervinu was touched off by Biddy the Boss. Now, the rider, I.P. Dunhu, riding Biddy the Boss, he's only Keith Dunhu's brother, I found out. He's Keith Dunhu's brother, making a rather belated go at the old racing.
Right, well, he's picked up a really nice ride here, because I would say that I could probably ride Biddy the Boss. Very safe conveyance based on the round of jumping she put in Fairy House.
It's funny, she might be safe, but she's not reliable. She's very in and out. And I think Chef de Kervinu, who was very well backed last time, can reverse the form and will be my most solid bet. I don't think this race is going to take much winning. What is your nap, though? It's time for the naps, actually. My nap of the weekend is Chef de Kervinu, I think, is rock solid in the 210 and Punchestown. What's yours, Yuki?
Well, I was going to nap Biddy the Boss, but I don't want to do that.
I
take your point. You've got Patrick Mullins. You're £2 better off for a narrow defeat. I just like to be with the mare. She'll be out in front, jumping away, putting them under pressure. It looks like she'll get a solo, but that's just, I won't nap her. I'll nap this Captain Guinness. I think he's a horse with a huge future.
I like it. We have racing up until 3:45, which is the concluding race, the Racing TV Club Day today, Maiden Hurdle. And Dukey says it's sacrosanct to finish a meeting with a Maiden Hurdle. I tend to agree, but a certain Black Bow is rocking up here.
Yeah, the bookies aren't going to like this. Black Bow should... It's a pretty decent heat for the grade now, granted, but Black Bow should be good enough, despite the fact that I think Captain Guinness would have picked him up in Navan. There's probably no shame in that, and I hope the form gets a boost before he runs.
I'm going to be taking him on with a horse who I think will definitely improve for the better ground here, trained by Jessica Harrington, who in fairness hasn't had a great time with the last couple of weeks. She's had a lot of place horses. Port Stanley, I think he's a nice horse. Just going to finish on this point. I've written an article elsewhere this morning where I said when you doubt Willie Mullins, you're wrong, basically. I cannot for the life of me figure out why they're plugging around in hurdle races with the 7-year-old Black Bow. I can for the life of me. He's 7, he'll be 8 next year. He's a chaser, out and out chaser, and here we are into his 7-year-old campaign and he's running a maiden hurdle. What are you at, Willie? Archie O'Leary. I mean, the colours, everything.
Well, this is the most interesting thing with those connections, because Florida Pearl was the one who bypassed his novice hurdle campaign. And I thought that this is going to become a thing. We've bought these horses to be chasers, so we either don't have a bumper season or don't have a novice hurdle season. Because what's the point? We're just wasting time here. But racing, you cannot overestimate how conservative racing is. And that's the way it's always been. There's a bumper season. There's a novice hurdle season. There's a novice chase season. Then there's a fully fledged chaser season. And that's just the way it is. I cannot understand it. When this happened with Florida Pearl, I was there. Even as a young man, I was there. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. They know what's going on there. They wanted to be a chaser. Give them an extra year's chasing. But it's obviously gone out the window since.
We hope you enjoyed a slightly longer show this week, but it was slightly longer because we're actually working whilst on the show. I'm in here in the background, I'm on my WhatsApp trying to get updates and this and that. We only have a price on Elixir Danae for the Supreme from the boy, the King.
Is it 20-1?
It's 25-1.
Oh, 25-1, market best. I'm going to have a few quid in him at 25-1, so. Oh, well, I'll wait till the show comes out because obviously I move markets, Johnny.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to On the Wire in association with Bar One Racing.